This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
It's a third Champions League final in 5 years for Liverpool, and of course a battle of European royalty. Liverpool against Real Madrid in Paris. The All Reds against the All Whites again. Sounds pretty romantic, but how will it unfold? We'll look at that. Mo's pledge to be at Anfield for the next campaign, and James's exclusive chat with Tom Werner as well. I'm Steve Othersall. Welcome to a special Champions League final Red Agenda with James Pearce and Ollie Kay as well. And James, a lot of people believing that Liverpool are favourites for this final, but how do you see it?
Yeah, slight favourites, I'd say. I think just Real Madrid's sheer amount of big game experience and the winners they've got running through their squad means that you'd be pretty stupid to go into this thinking it was going to be a walk in the park. The biggest difference for me, obviously, from when the two teams last met in the Champions League final 4 years ago, is that I think back then, you know, you kind of thought, well, Liverpool were the real underdogs, and it's a mark of just how far they've come in that intervening period, that fact, you know, I think you probably look at them as not just equals, but probably better than Real Madrid in terms of what they've produced consistently in the last couple of years. So, yeah, certainly Liverpool have got, you know, plenty of big game experience as well. I've always been pretty confident since we knew that this was going to be Liverpool's opponent in the final, because I do think if Liverpool play to their capabilities, they will have too much firepower, too much legs, too much energy for Real Madrid. Yet, you know, any team that's knocked out PSG, Chelsea and Man City en route to the final and produced the kind of heroic salvage acts that Ancelotti's side are, you'd be stupid to write them off.
It's pretty undeniable, Ollie, that Liverpool deserve their place in this showpiece final for the way they navigated the group stage, the group of death, apparently, and the teams they've beaten subsequently to get to this point.
Yeah, I think if you look at the previous few rounds and playing Benfica and Villarreal, it probably doesn't look like the toughest route to the Champions League final on paper in terms of the later knockout stages. But you look at the group they had, a group that really had people like me thinking, God, that's a tough group. They won every game impressively. You know, they breezed through the last 16. And you would often look at the Champions League and say, you don't very often get the two best teams in Europe in the final. It very rarely happens that way. You looked at, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona at one stage being, you know, head and shoulders above every other team in Europe. They never got to play a final against each other. I would say the best two teams over the last 4 years in Europe have been Liverpool and Manchester City, particularly this season. Maybe not for a brief spell, both of them the previous season, but certainly this season I think they've been clearly the best teams in Europe. City were so close to making it and fell narrowly short. Liverpool are there, and you know they're up against the Real Madrid team who have shown before, I think, that even when they've not been the best team in Europe, I don't think they were the best team in Europe when they won it in 2018 against Liverpool, but they've shown they have a knack of winning these big European games, big European finals. And I mean, James is saying it's close to call. I would totally agree with that. I'm looking at various statistical models and data models which just judge on results over the last 12 months or so. They all tell you that Liverpool are favourites, but I think it's really tight because Real Madrid just seem to have this sort of X factor which takes them to a higher level in the Champions League.
I used that word romantic at the top of the podcast. There is something really romantic about all this, James, isn't there? Not least if you go back in the history books to 81 and Phil Thompson lifting the cup for a third time for Liverpool, but maybe even come more present day. And as you said, the battle in Kiev. There's so many narratives that go around these two who are European giants.
Yeah, there really are. Yeah, you're right. You know, obviously plenty of memories of of Paris in 81 and all the, you know, the kind of the stories from that final that, you know, have entered folklore. I heard Phil Thompson saying the other day that, you know, he's desperately hoping that Andy Robertson can pop up with the winner on Saturday night just to silence Alan Kennedy so he can stop dining out on all the his tales from 81. And I think, you know, you're right when you throw into the mix Kiev, and, you know, I was at Kirby yesterday for the media day, and Mo Salah not backing down on his talk of the revenge mission, you know, that still burns very much brightly inside him, despite the fact that Sergio Ramos won't be anywhere near that pitch on Saturday night. So, you know, you've got that element to it. And then, you know, you've also got, you know, Carlo Ancelotti and of course, you know, his history with Liverpool as well, which was brought into sharp focus by the anniversary of Istanbul this week. So, yeah, it's just set up to be, you know, a fantastic occasion, you know. And I think if we probably learn anything from not just the two finals that Liverpool have been involved in this season, but pretty much everyone in the modern era, you know, if they do find a way, then they're probably going to put us through the ringer in doing so, because yeah, it's very rarely ever straightforward. And I think the way that, you know, Real Madrid, the way in which they've come back so many times when you thought they might be on their way out, suggests that yeah, it's probably going to be one of those that kind of goes one way and the other, and is going to be decided in the end by pretty fine margins.
So the manager's mantra is revenge doesn't exist. Mo very much sticking to his guns, as James mentioned, saying, you know, he's pretty much motivated by revenge. And the interview after the Villarreal game was when he first aired that very publicly, then put it on his social media, Ollie. Certainly not backed away from any of this. Is revenge a good way to term it? Is payback? There's obviously something in these players' heads.
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly for Mo Salah, I mean, I know from speaking to various Liverpool players over the years that post-2018, I think they felt that they avenged or atoned for that defeat by winning the Champions League the next season. I don't think there was any much that was sort of personal felt towards Real Madrid. I think they just felt that they were, back in Kiev in 2018, they were a team that hadn't really reached its full potential. They obviously didn't have Fabinho and Van Dijk and Alisson. And obviously, they, you know, they won it the next year. I think that sort of exercise that goes for a lot of the players and probably for the team as a whole and for Klopp. But Mo Salah still has this understandable grievance about Kiev and about Sergio Ramos, and he's remarkably unfiltered, isn't he? Considering, you know, he's one of the biggest superstars in world football. He's got a big personal brand. He just talks openly. You know, he'll talk openly about how much he wants to win the Golden Boot or the Ballon d'Or. He'll talk openly about how, yeah, things aren't quite there with his contract, or in this case, you know, wanting revenge or a score to settle with Real Madrid. And it's quite refreshing to have a player speaking that openly. But yeah, he was in the form of his life back in 2018, and seemed, he started that game brilliantly, as they all did. And then the injury inflicted by Ramos just changed the game completely. Lallana came on, wasn't the same sort of player, and events and mistakes conspired against Liverpool. And yeah, I feel Liverpool have atoned for that, avenged that. And in terms of this team, they're probably more determined to put right what happened last season in the Champions League, when they played Real at a time when, you know, confidence was really low, when they were in that real malaise between sort of January and April last season. And they didn't do themselves justice in those two legs. They will feel that Real are going to face a much, much better team this time, which is undoubtedly the case.
There's a piece by Nick Miller on The Athletic right now, talking about Mo Salah, James, and he says he looked at a photo of himself in a sling before the final against Tottenham to give himself motivation. You saw him at the press day, you say. What did you make of how the mindset he's in and how he's building up to this final?
incredibly relaxed and incredibly confident. It was certainly no sign of any nerves ahead of such a big occasion. Yeah, I think the standout line was he was asked, you know, he was actually reminded about the Champions League final in 1981 and the fact that there was this unlikely hero, and someone asked him, you know, who do you think, or, you know, who could be the unlikely hero for Liverpool on Saturday night? And he just said, well, hopefully it's me. He said, you know, I want to score the winning goal. And I think, you know, that's very much his mindset. And, you know, Jordan Henderson sat alongside him, kind of made a bit of a joke about Salah's revenge comments and said, no, you didn't mean it, did you, Mo? You know, it came out wrong, didn't it? And Salah was just grinning alongside him as if to say, no, I meant every word of it. So, yeah, you know, he talked about the pain of that night. And obviously, at the time, Liverpool just getting to a Champions League final felt absolutely huge because it had been so long and they'd exceeded all expectations. So, yeah, to be taken out of the game in the way he was by Sergio Ramos, because it was, you know, despite all the debate that went on afterwards, it was about as cynical as you could possibly get, the way that he wrapped his arm around him and dragged him to the ground. He knew exactly what he was doing, just like he knew exactly what he was doing when he planted that elbow on Loris Karius's head. You know, how much difference, how much impact that then made to the goals Karius conceded, we'll never truly know. But yeah, certainly from Salah's perspective, you know, it's funny, isn't it, the thing with revenge, because, you know, even, you know, Klopp said himself he doesn't believe in that, and he talked about the German, he said in Germany we have a saying that basically translates as you always meet twice. You know, of course I remember Kiev, but it's not what motivates me going into this game. And I think the reality is that none of those players will need any extra motivation come Saturday night. And I think if anything, from the ones who stopped and chatted yesterday, you know, even the ones that were around back in Kiev in 2018, the much bigger motivation is ensuring they finish this incredible season with the biggest prize of the lot. Because, you know, missing out on the Premier League title by the most narrow of margins last weekend cut deep. And it was really interesting that Klopp gave them all 2 days off straight afterwards, because, you know, I think a lot of managers with such a quick turnaround before the Champions League final would have had them in the following morning and thought, right, we need to make every one of these days this week count, with just, you know, 6 days between the last Premier League game and the Champions League final. But Klopp wanted, you know, them to have a couple of days, not just to rest weary limbs, but I think to clear their heads as well. And it was only Wednesday morning at Kirby that they reconvened. You know, they were able to do their recovery sessions at home on the Monday. And then, you know, treating the final as well like a normal European trip, not flying out till Friday morning. And I think that's the message really from Klopp, that, you know, we don't try and not do anything differently. You know, these Liverpool have been immense on their travels in Europe this season. When you think, you know, they won every group game, didn't they? You know, they won in the San Siro, produced a brilliant performance away to Benfica. Yes, it was pretty hairy for 45 minutes away to Villarreal, but, you know, they turned it around. They found a way in that second half to win that game. So, you know, I thought it was, you know, really interesting the way that Klopp has approached this final.
One of the biggest factors could be, as you're really saying there, James, it's experience, isn't it, Ollie? And actually, the majority of these players now were involved in that Champions League win against Spurs.
Yeah, I remember writing my report after the Kiev final and talking about how inexperienced the Liverpool players were in Champions League terms next to those Real Madrid players. And if you look at it 4 years later, and people like Henderson and Van Dijk and Salah, Mane, etc., you know, Alisson are really proven Champions League players. And you also look at it from the other point of view, and Ronaldo's moved on, and Ramos has moved on, Varane has moved on, Keylor Navas has moved on. You've got players like, you know, Kroos and Modric, who are really very much in the twilight of their career. And it feels like Liverpool are, you know, so much more experienced as a Champions League team. And I guess you look at some of the youngest, you know, younger players in Real's squad, and they really are very inexperienced. You know, Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo, etc. It's, you know, Valverde to an extent. It feels like as those two teams have gone on different cycles or reached different points of their cycles, you know, Liverpool possibly in some ways could be said to have the upper hand in terms of experience. So when people are talking about the experience and know-how that Real have, yes, with Carvajal, with Kroos, with Modric, Benzema, etc. But it's a strange one, because I, you know, look, watching Real in that quarterfinal against Chelsea, that semi-final against Man City, yes, there were moments where that sort of experience and big game know-how came through from those players. But there are also moments where Real didn't really look like a particularly savvy, streetwise Champions League team. I thought their second leg performance against Chelsea was horrendous for about 80 minutes. They were capitulating. And I think sometimes we just sort of look at the scoreline and work backwards when we're trying to sort of explain what's happened in a match. You know, Real held firm, so we were all saying, oh, it's because of their know-how and experience. And you know, realistically, Chelsea should have beaten them over, you know, in that second leg. Manchester City should certainly have put them out of sight on the balance of play in the two legs. So I think there's, you know, there is that know-how amongst the big players, and there's the real quality, you know, stellar, highest quality that some of the younger players possess at Real. But I think between there, that there are potentially cracks, and there are areas where Liverpool do have more experience and more know-how and more possibly cohesion and coherence as a team. So it's an intriguing matchup, whereas 4 years ago I really did just think Real would win comfortably because they were a better team. I think it's very different now.
And one of those areas, it is Liverpool's midfield. And obviously there's such quality in both sides that you sort of think taking one player out shouldn't really affect everything. But the question mark against Thiago, I think, left a lot of Liverpool fans thinking, oh no, how does that readdress the balance? We talked about it in the last podcast, James. There was a glimmer of hope in the press conference yesterday that Thiago and Fabinho could start this game together. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I think Fabinho will start as long as there's no adverse reaction in the next day or two. He trained normally at Kirby on Wednesday, looked sharp in all the drills they were doing. So, you know, that's always been the plan for him. And there's certainly no sense of him being rushed back. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's Fabinho, it's Henderson. And then Thiago's due to resume full training at Kirby today, Thursday. So, the signs are a lot more promising than they were at the start of the week when we recorded the last podcast. Because, of course, then, you know, he was off for a scan on his Achilles and you thought, well, any type of damage, really. And he's just not going to have sufficient time to recover. But he was there at Kirby yesterday doing a session in the gym with head physio Lee Nobes. And yeah, Klopp said it is a lot more positive than they initially feared. And you know, I just think seeing Thiago on that team sheet on Saturday night would just give everyone a huge lift. And I think also, you know, I think it's what it does to Real Madrid as well, because he is an absolutely, you know, elite world-class performer. And you want, he's someone you want in that team, especially, you know, that midfield area with what will it probably be, you know, Casemiro and Cruz and Modric. You know, it's, you just want Thiago in there. I mean, we're talking about someone who, you know, in the few months before he joined Liverpool was the best player in the Champions League final when Bayern Munich won it. And I also think even with the five subs rule in Europe as well, I just think even if there's a slight kind of concern, I think it's such a big game and he is so influential and he's been so good for the last probably 3 or 4 months that I think you need to take a punt on him. Because I think, do you know what? Even if he can't last 90 minutes, you know, having that five subs means that you can change it. And whether you turn to Naby Keita or James Milner, you know, obviously he's got Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott as well. I just think you need Thiago out there from the start.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Gravity had a good run, but it's time to feel the weightlessness of the Brooks Glycerin 21. These running shoes feature nitrogen-infused DNA Loft V3 cushioning. Brooks has even magnified the plushness to elevate the softness to new levels. And if you want extra support, find these same features in the Brooks Glycerin GTS 21. Learn more and shop now at brooksrunning.com. That's brooksrunning.com.
We know what Liverpool have got with their firepower. The numbers are incredible. The options are amazing. But let's face it, Real Madrid have got their own star man in Karim Benzema, Ollie. And Vinicius also a massive threat for them as well. I think between the two of them, they're in triple figures, aren't they, for assists and goals. How do you stop Benzema and Vinicius Jr.?
Benzema, I think a large part of it is about supply, and I think a lot of the supply comes from Vinicius Jr., who is as talented a wide player as there is in world football at the moment. He's fantastic. He's young, but he's an elite performer. I think when we look back on that game that where Real played Liverpool at the in the was it quarterfinal first leg last season, he was the player who really did a lot of the damage, and he gave Trent a bit of a runaround on the night. I think it was one of those rare games that Trent's critics can cling to and say, look, he is a bad defender, because he did have a bad night, and I don't think he will particularly enjoy coming up against Vinicius. But yeah, it's a difficult game. But then Benzema this season, I mean, it feels like it just sometimes happens with these elite level sort of players in Spain or in Italy, where it takes one sort of great season where they really, really stand out for people in England in particular to say, that guy is actually pretty good. He scored something like 323 goals for Real Madrid since he went there as a young player in 2009. He scored 44 goals in all competitions this season. I think it's fair to say he has thrived more on an individual level since Ronaldo left and since the dynamic of the team changed. But he has always been a top, absolute elite level player, even from when he was breaking through at Lyon. And if he's now in the form of his life at 33 or whatever it is, it's only confirming what I think has been pretty apparent for a long, long time. But stopping him is very difficult because of the quality he has. But I think if you can keep Vinicius quiet, which isn't just a one-man job for Trent, it probably comes down to Jordan Henderson and whoever else is sort of covering on that right-hand side. Yeah, I think that would certainly help.
Madrid wrapped up their title, a couple of weeks ago. They've had time. They've had preparation time, James, haven't they? A little bit of rest, mental break perhaps. Ancelotti's geared it all towards the final. Liverpool, let's face it, it's been long, intense. And only a couple of days ago, they were still in that melee of trying to win the Premier League title. Is it fine for Liverpool to go from that into this? Are they suffering anyway with fatigue?
I think it's difficult. It's difficult to judge, I think, from the outside, how that dynamic will play out on Saturday night. You look at it and you think it probably is an advantage to Real Madrid. I think it does help them, the fact that, 3 weeks ago, wasn't it, they won La Liga. Ancelotti has been able to give players a breather since then. And then, I think most of his first choice team played last weekend. I think it's probably more the mental side of things as well. When Liverpool have had to go absolutely flat out game after game after game, there's bound to have been an element of fatigue there after last weekend, which is, I'm sure that was a big reason why Klopp gave them those couple of days off. But I actually asked Klopp yesterday about preparation, because it's so different to Madrid 3 years ago when Liverpool played Tottenham in the final, where they had a 3 week gap between the end of the Premier League season and the Champions League final. And he said that was actually too long, because he felt that them players lost rhythm, and you're desperately trying to organise like a training camp, and the friendly they had against Benfica B to try and replicate Spurs' kind of tactical setup and formation. And he said that was actually quite difficult to manage. He said he's pretty happy it is only 6 days, because he said that gives them enough time to do what they need to do tactically to get the players ready. So I think on that note, we'll only really know come Saturday night. But certainly, looking at the watching training and looking at the body language and the way in which they were interacting yesterday, you certainly didn't. There was no sense there that it was. You were feeling like, could this be almost a game too far? Klopp actually mentioned Basel back in 2016, where he said essentially, I think he described it as Liverpool were running on three wheels by then. With I think again that was a 63 game season, but of course the dynamic then was so different, because he didn't have the squad he has now, where in Basel, you know, there was players playing who were nowhere near fit. That will be very different this time around. And even when you look back to Kiev, you think, you know, he talked about when they lost Salah, you know, I think they had to bring on Adam Lallana, who, you know, very different type of player, and someone who'd hardly kicked a ball for I think the previous month because of injuries. Yet now, with the embarrassment of riches he's got, you know, if anything did happen to one of the front three, Diaz, Mane, Salah on Saturday night, you know, you're talking about Jota and Firmino waiting in the wings. So, you know, I don't think that'll play a massive part on the night.
Ollie, what do we make of the comments from Salah and Mane on their futures? Did it offer any indication of what might happen to the pair of them next season?
It almost, you know, amounted to a no comment. I mean, obviously Salah said he wouldn't leave this summer. He had no intention of leaving this summer, which again just sort of increases the sort of urgency around those contract talks, because I know it's going over old ground in this podcast because we've talked about it before, but if neither of them ends up signing a contract extension this summer, there would be an argument, a financial argument at least, or business argument, for trying to sell them, one of them at least, this summer, rather than being left in a situation where you're at risk of losing both of them on free 12 months later. So I don't think it really told us anything new, but it's a concern. It's been a concern all season, really. And I think Liverpool are doing everything they can, and I don't think anyone should imagine it's as easy as just sort of handing over whatever amount of money is being asked for. But it's also complicated when you hear of PSG, the enormous sums that they're going to be paying Kylian Mbappe, the enormous sums Manchester City are going to be paying Erling Haaland. It changes that market for elite players at a time when two of Liverpool's elite players are entering the final year of their contract. Real Madrid are left with, having missed out on Mbappe and Haaland, it seems, are left with a gap up front. You know, could they go for one of Salah or Mane? It's a unsettling situation, which I think Liverpool have been right to put to the back of their minds and concentrate on this remarkable season and try and get things sorted out in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Manny's quite right to say, pull that to one side, let's get on with the final and sort it out after that. If Liverpool do win this final, James, they'll look back at the story of how they actually got here, not just this season, but the fact that they fought so hard at the back end of last season to get into the Champions League. And that would be truly, truly remarkable.
Yeah, I think it would certainly, when you're looking back on the journey to Paris, it did start at the Hawthorns, didn't it? That's the, I think if Liverpool do triumph in the Stade de France on Saturday night, that is where you'll trace it back to, because, you know, when you think where Liverpool were at then and where they're at now, it's just crazy, isn't it? You know, we've just gone past the year anniversary of that Alisson header, and Liverpool seconds away from drawing against a team that had already been relegated. You know, it looked like they were heading for the Europa League, and, you know, even as big as that moment felt at the time, no one could have foreseen that it would help kind of launch a season like we've had this time around. You know, a lot of rival fans have said Liverpool have had, you know, quite a kind route to the final, but I think that completely ignores, you know, that certainly wasn't the sense when the group stage draw was made. You know, Klopp burst out laughing at Kirby. He was saying when the draw was made, because he couldn't believe how tough it was to, you know, to have AC Milan, to have Atletico Madrid, who we know are, you know, are such difficult opponents, and Porto that had, you know, weren't far off knocking Chelsea out of the Champions League the previous season. So, you know, Liverpool achieved something no English team has ever done before, winning all six group games, and then, you know, to go and win in the San Siro is, again, when they beat Inter, is no easy feat. So, yeah, it has been an unbelievable journey to get there, and you just hope now that they can finish it off, because it does feel like Saturday night probably is the difference between this season going down in the history books as a great one or as an iconic one, because, you know, the streets of Liverpool will undoubtedly be packed on Sunday regardless for that parade, because hundreds of thousands of people will want to show their appreciation for this manager and this group of players for the memories they've given them. But, you know, you want them to have that European Cup on board, because there's no getting away from the fact it would be a bit underwhelming if a team that's been so good for so long did only end up with the two domestic cups to show for it.
How would you feel, Ollie? I mean, it will be a City celebrating the outstanding football that we've seen, but if they don't have the European Cup on board, how would it feel?
Disappointing. A bit deflating, because I think the quadruple talk, while it's inevitable and understandable, it was always a long shot. You know, the Premier League title was always a long shot, but I think it certainly felt within reach at Anfield on for at least sort of half an hour or so on last Sunday. Look, it has been an incredible season. It is an incredible team, and it's been shown to be an incredible team over the last 4 years, really, barring a really poor spell early last year, which was freakish, and that was the outlier. We've seen Liverpool just season after season put together incredible results. They are extremely unfortunate that they've come up with a 97-point season and a 92-point season and not won the league, because Manchester City have been 1 point better. To me, they and City, I don't know which order you put them in, but to me, they and City are the best teams in Europe and have been for most of that period. And I think they just need to win that second Champions League or win a second Premier League title just to underline that, perhaps to the sceptics, but also above all to themselves, because you don't really want to be in a situation where people are looking back and say, well, they only won one European Cup, they only won one Premier League title. That, you know, yes, they won the league and the League Cup and the FA Cup, but this team is without question a great team. But you don't want people to be saying, yeah, but you know, they won the League Cup and the FA Cup. They won nothing the season before. Though, you know, to me, it's a team that people shouldn't need to see a European Cup on the side, another European Cup, to be persuaded that this is a great team. But I think realistically, I think that would settle the argument.
You know, Real Madrid is a magnificent club, and I'm not surprised that they're in the final. Hopefully it will be Liverpool's day, but it's going to be a very competitive match.
Right, from there, we're going to go to James's exclusive interview with Tom Werner, the Liverpool chairman. Of course, Fenway Sports Group bought Liverpool Football Club 12 years ago. You sat down with Tom, who, let's have a little listen to him now, who says he could never have predicted the levels of success that they'd reach within just over a decade. But they did have a focus on the Champions League and what they could actually do in the competition.
When we bought it, we were trying to figure out, well, how many years can we be in Champions League out of 5 or 10? You know, how many years can we actually make top four? But the fact that we have been in the finals 3 of the last 5 years, just it has exceeded our wildest dreams. And yet we're very humble about it, because we know how competitive the league is.
James, so we just heard a little bit there from Tom Werner talking about how they've massively over-exceeded their expectations. How did you find him when you sat down with him?
Yeah, he was good company, yeah. He wanted to kind of reflect on, you know, just how far the club has come in that, you know, what will be coming up to 12 years later on in the year since they completed that takeover. And the contrast is huge, isn't it, when you think the first game of the FSG reign was that unbelievably wretched 2-0 Merseyside derby defeat at Goodison, which left Liverpool only off the bottom of the Premier League table on goal difference. And yeah, he said, you know, to imagine then that, you know, be taking his seat in the Stade de France on Saturday night for a third Champions League final in the space of 5 seasons is, you know, the stuff of dreams. So it's not been a smooth journey by any stretch of the imagination, has it? And plenty of bumps along the road, you know, admitting that, you know, FSG would hold their hands up and say they've certainly made mistakes, you know, not least the Super League debacle just over a year ago. But yeah, I think they've also done a lot of good for the club when you look at how things have been transformed, not only on the pitch but off it as well. And certainly, you know, the main trigger for everything that's been achieved has been the appointment of Klopp in 2015, and certainly came through from speaking to him just what a huge thing it was for the owners, the fact that Klopp agreed that extension, because they were preparing for him to walk away in 2024 and stick to his plan to take a sabbatical. So yeah, I think it's fair to say that he said they owe a huge debt of gratitude to Ula, Klopp's wife, for convincing him to stick around for a bit longer, because I think Tom Werner probably probably said the words that every Liverpool fan would agree with, that nobody wants to think of the day that's going to come at some point in the future when Jurgen Klopp is no longer Liverpool manager.
Well, let's hear from Tom Werner now on the qualities that the Liverpool manager possesses.
Obviously, I have been privileged to see up close the job that Jurgen has done, but I think that it ranks certainly as one of the great achievements of the club. I told somebody recently that I was at Fenway Park and was chatting with the CEO of Siemens, the German technology company. He's German, and so I was talking to him about the talents of Jurgen. And Jurgen would be a brilliant CEO wherever he landed. And what I find about him is that he's obviously a great strategist and handles the players so well. But his personality is just so warm and embracing, and he's kind, and he's got a keen sense of humor, and he's humble. And he's got a perspective about football, which is really quite special. You know, it's obviously critically important to our fans and to you and to me and to everybody who follows football. But he is able to put it in perspective. You know, we live in a very complex world, and we've all had to deal with the ravages of COVID and what's going on in the Ukraine. And you know, Jurgen has just been able to put football in perspective. And it's a joy to know him. And I do want to also give some credit to his wife, Eula, who I think was very helpful in suggesting that Jurgen extend his tenure at Liverpool, because it's wonderful that he's going to be with us for a few more years.
So, brilliant piece on The Athletic right now. Exclusive interview. James talking with Tom Werner on a variety of subjects. Luis Diaz, all sorts of in there. Well worth looking at. Just to continue on the Jurgen Klopp theme. And Jurgen presented with the Manager of the Year Award by the League Managers Association just a couple of days ago, Ollie. Given to him by Sir Alex Ferguson. The pair clearly showing great mutual respect. A little bit of a gag in there as well, as Fergie tried to walk off before the photo.
Was it a gag?
I don't know, was it?
I wasn't sure. I saw the footage of Klopp sort of bringing him back in for the photo. I thought I wasn't sure whether it was a joke or whether he was being humble and not wanting to be in the picture. No, Ferguson has always spoken very highly of Klopp, and I'm sure he must just wish that Manchester United had managed to get him back in 2013 or 2014, when they were looking for a new manager. You think how different the last decade might have been for both Liverpool and Manchester United if that had been the case. So, yeah, I mean, a worthy recipient of Manager of the Year. There will be people who will say, well, they finished second in the league. They've won the two lesser cups. But if they win the Champions League, on top of getting 92 points, on top of getting winning the other two cups, that is an incredible season. And yes, he's got a great group of players, but they are a great group of players which has been pushed to the absolute maximum by Klopp. I would not play down Pep Guardiola's performance and achievement either. I think he's an absolutely wonderful coach and manager, but I think Klopp's season has been absolutely remarkable, particularly from the depths of last season and from a position where I don't think going into the season many people felt it was going to be quite this good. I think, you know, there's always that giddy pre-season optimism among some, but I don't think many people were thinking 92 points, two cups and a Champions League final against Real Madrid. I think this is a team that has performed well beyond expectations.
James, it's hard to look past Jurgen for that award, isn't it?
Yeah, I completely agree with what Ollie said. I think, you know, people will snipe and say, well, you know, it's ridiculous he didn't win the Premier League, what about Guardiola? But yeah, when you take a step back and look at what this Liverpool team has done this season, as Ollie said, from where they were at the back end of last season, you know, there would have been no title race without Liverpool. It would have been a procession. It wouldn't, you know, English football would have turned into the Bundesliga for the last 5 years, to be honest, without what Klopp has done at Liverpool. So I think for the brand of football, the way in which they've entertained as well, the glory they've had, the ability to juggle his resources so unbelievably well, to maintain that challenge on four fronts, you know, for so long. Yeah, certainly they couldn't have picked a better winner for me.
Guys, loved your company. Thank you very much indeed, Ollie and James. Don't forget you can read all their stuff from Paris over the weekend and next week as well. Hopefully positive stuff. And a quick reminder, if you don't already have subscribed to The Athletic, you can read all the articles on Liverpool if you head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Pound a month for 6 months. That's a special price right now. Go to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Enjoy the European Cup final, the Champions League final, and we'll see you after the weekend.